Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 62.
62, a mamma mia, a pizzeria. Hi.
So I think this podcast is the first one we've recorded from during a thunderstorm.
Oh yeah, it is. It's a thunderstorming majorly in Brooklyn and New York right now.
But when better to record a pre-show than when you're stuck in your house because of a thunderstorm?
Yeah, it's true.
Hey, everybody. Hope it's been a fun month. Has it been a month since the last one?
I don't know. I'm sorry that we haven't done a podcast. You know, yeah. It just gets busy. And it's just me and Josh.
Yeah, we talk a big game, but...
Yeah, we do. But, I mean, one day we will have someone who can help assist us and will push us and can book all the interviews and everything.
You know, and we struggle to show on being like how much of our actual business and what's going on day to day do we want to tell everybody? Because we do, with this podcast, want to share our journey, but we also want to make sure that we're being strategic and things that we want to do, we announce correctly and that we release information as we want to release information. But I think something interesting that we've been struggling with that we can talk a little bit about and which has taken up our entire month basically is the process of finding the right theater space to do in San Diego for our upcoming show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the plight of finding a theater is always, always the struggle, right? It's like two-pronged. It's do you have the funds to do it and do you have a place to do it? Most of the time, what to do and who to do it with is easy.
And, you know, when you think commercial producing, which is what we're doing, you often think of Broadway. And there's like 40 theaters on Broadway, and there's always tons and tons of shows that want to go in. And the metaphor that sometimes you hear, we at least heard it at school, was that it's like planes trying to land. And it's just there's too many planes in the air and not enough runways. Mm-hmm. And about, you know, a third of the theaters, of the 40 theaters, are just always booked up. So, you know, with circus, it's a little different. You know, you have a circus tent or you're going into an arena. And the thing about having a circus tent is you control much more of your actual business than you do in a theater. Yeah. You are both the show and you are the venue.
You still have to find the land.
You still got to find the land. You got to constantly travel. And it's not necessarily easier to be both things.
No. Well, right. So that's the pretext
to where we're at.
Yeah, because on one hand, if you go into a pre-existing theater, you don't have to worry about permits. You don't have to worry about payroll for the theater, you know, venue staff. There's a lot of positives of going into
makes
a theater.
Makes it easier. Yeah. Some people do it. That's why more shows go into theaters. But also, if you follow us, you know that we're not super into traditional style theater where you just sit in a room and talk a lot about how can you create a show that's immersive and interactive and makes it really worth paying the ticket price to go and see something live as opposed to watching it on YouTube. So we have some cool stuff we want to do with the theater that makes it immersive, and we'll be announcing what that is soon. But
yeah, it's a I just cut you off, but it's just a real constant up and, you know, I think like being a producer is amazing. It's so awesome. There are so many highs and like so many lows. Your day is never boring, but the lows are something that you have to like get through.
Yes. And the things that people would think are boring aren't necessarily boring, but they are difficult. So being specific, we've gone through a bunch of different buildings and we've had a bunch offered to us and we're trying to figure out which is the right one. And we've come down to basically our top one and our top two. And the issue now is, can we legally turn them into theaters? Because
this is the high and the low.
The low. We can make a deal for the building. That's not too difficult. But will the city let us permit the building to be used as a theater in the amount of time we need them to do it?
Right.
And how much is it going to cost? And how much do we have to spend and potentially lose if the city says no, you can't do it?
Right. So the joy of doing a city that has no theater is that you are bringing theater to a city that has not very much of specifically commercial theater. San Diego, you know, has San Diego Rep, La Jolla, Playhouse, Old Globe. But those are all older, established theaters.
Traditional
theaters that, I mean, not so traditional. I mean, La Jolla does a lot of interesting new work. But, I mean, it's the Old Globe is, you know, And they're nonprofit theaters. Not too much commercial ventures happening in San Diego, let alone
dance shows.
So the positive is that it's awesome because we're one of the first things to be in San Diego. Bad is that there isn't anything in San Diego. So most people who work in the city government don't actually know
we just don't
what we're doing.
Fall into the categories right. that the municipal
well, when you
code
look at,
lays out.
Right. When you look at the municipal code in San Diego, you look under theater and it's movie theaters, and you look under assembly and entertainment and it's churches and entertainment shows with seats. Yes. I mean, there's not even a category of theatrical performance or anything like that. In New York City, if you have a need for permits and you need advice on how to go about something, there is an entire office that is dedicated to the arts and entertainment culture for the city of New York. I mean, it's just it's night and day of like of a city that has a lot of art and a city that doesn't. And the struggle is real.
So the first thing, hopefully this is a little bit informative for people who are considering doing this and going into a building, then going into a theater. So the first thing you have to figure out is the building zoned correctly? So most of these have zoning code, which means some things are residential for just houses, some things are mixed, and some things are just commercial, some things are
industrial.
Just industrial. And you have to see if the building you want fits into the right kind of commercial building, or if you can rezone it. And then within commercial, you have different kinds of commercials. So for example, there's retail, that's like people walking up to your store and buying stuff. There's a restaurant. You know, any kind of business that might rent a space, you know, is categorized in there. But obviously, like, theater shows renting spaces is not on the top 1,000 most common.
No, but it doesn't even have an actual even category.
No. So the category for us in San Diego is entertainment and assembly. And then within that, you have to figure out what the building was previously for. So when you have a building, you register it with the government. So if you want to change what the use of the building is, even if it's allowed, you need to tell the government you're changing what the use of the building is. And they need to certify you for all these things. And that includes parking and ADA bathrooms and the right amount of doors for fire exits. And, you know, all these things we knew going into it.
Right.
But even if you know it, the learning process of the amount of detail that each city
yes.
has individually
and like where
is
to
so
do
specific.
It and when to do it and how to do it. I mean, that's the other thing. San Diego is also a city that is blowing up right now. Like so many businesses are opening and yet the government isn't ready for this all. And so like
yeah,
the process
is underfunded.
Yeah.
Understaffed.
Yeah, so anyway, permits, blah, 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 blah.
See, I don't know if it's interesting to people. Like, it's interesting to me because I'm like, if I was listening to a podcast trying to figure out how to do my own show,
yeah.
I'd want to hear at least a little bit about permitting because
right.
I knew it was coming. But maybe for those of you who are just like, I want to listen to some circus artists
yeah.
chat, maybe that isn't interesting.
Well, I don't know. If you want to do your own show, you're going to run into this problem at some point. Even if you're going into a theater, you're going to have to get insurance or yeah, I don't know. You're just gonna have to do something that's not fun. But anyway, I just came from a luncheon.
Dun, dun, dun.
So I'm on the board of this organization called New Dramatists. It's in New York. It's been around for over 70 years. Basically, the organization, every year they pick 8 playwrights to fund for a 7-year residency. And those playwrights are basically
all of your favorite writers on Netflix.
Yeah, basically all any show you like on Netflix is a New Dramatist playwright.
No joke.
On the writing staff. Most recently, Glow. And shout out to Christopher Diaz. You know, it's amazing because we don't expect any actual work, like product. It's really about 7 years of just creating, and nowhere do you have that support of just being a writer and being able to create and develop and work and try new things. Okay, so this luncheon is around the Tony Awards. The luncheon is no longer about New Dramatists. It has become a Tony Award campaign. So
stop.
Everyone who's nominated for a Tony Award goes to this luncheon. And at the beginning of the luncheon, the guy who like has read like every book on tape that you've ever heard, I forget his name, he reads out every single person's name who is there, an actor or a director or writer who is at the luncheon, and we get a spotlight on them and we all have to clap for them. And it takes about an hour. What made it great this year was I happened to be sitting next to three of the actors from the new Harry Potter play.
What?
On my right was the man who plays Ron Weasley. And it was so weird because he kind of like looks like what you'd imagine Ron Weasley to look like when he's grown up. So I was just like, oh my God, it's Ron. And then Draco Malfoy. Obviously, he didn't have his blonde wig on, so he didn't look so like it. And then Harry Potter's son, Albus Potter.
Who's the main character, basically, right?
He is the main character, yeah. And other than Harry Potter. And the Draco's son is called, like, Scorpius or something. And he is nominated for a Tony Award. I met him, too. But so I was sitting with, you know, Harry Potter people. And they're obviously British. And they're like, what the deuce is this luncheon? Like, what is this?
The British people use the term, what the deuce?
No, they're like, what the fuck? What the fuck is this luncheon? Is what it was. And we were like, we have to clap for every single person in here. I was like, yeah, and you're going to have to stand up, too. And so they were like so lovely and so nice. And it was also weird because people kept coming up to me thinking that I was also an actor or a playwright. But everyone's like, are you, you're in this play this season, aren't you? And I was like, no, on the board. Okay, so you know how they introduce everyone in the room. One of the people they introduced in the room was Justin Peck because he's the choreographer nominated for a Tony Award for Carousel. He's also the, was he like artistic director or?
Yeah, or I think he's resident director.
Whatever, at New York City Ballet. And he choreographed two pieces that Josh and I have recently seen, and one of which is called The Times Are Racing.
Which blew our minds.
Which we loved. I think we've talked about it on the podcast. Yeah. So I, when he stood up, I was like, oh my God, he's not that far away from me. I need to go meet him. And I never do this, but I was like, I need to go. So I met him. And he is so nice and gracious and like so awesome. And most people in the room, I don't really think they knew exactly who he was. I talked to him in this newest piece that he did at Lincoln Center, which we just saw called Easy. It was for Jerome Robbins, who is the choreographer of a lot of things, but most people know him from West Side Story.
And the backdrops were done by Stephen Powers, who is this amazing artist that Lindsay and I are both super into, who lives down the street from us, or at least his studio is down the street from us. And we have a few pieces of his in our office, including a circusy one that says, everyday juggle, and it's got different things that one might juggle on it, like chainsaws,
clubs,
and a checkbook. But he did the backdrop for this show, and Justin Peck was choreographing it, so we couldn't miss it.
But I would say the whole luncheon is super weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like really a place to sightsee Broadway celebrities. Yeah.
So another show we actually saw quite recently, maybe like 2 days before we saw Easy, was Cirque du Soleil's Volta.
Yeah, it was. And I loved it. I really loved it.
You said it was your favorite Cirque du Soleil show you'd ever seen.
Yeah. It felt different than most every other Cirque du Soleil show I've seen. So for that, I really enjoyed it. And the music was
amazing.
Amazing. It was so good.
It was by the band M83, at least the composer from that band. So like super electronic, not all this weird yodely kind of sounds they sometimes do.
Yeah. And we, our podcast guest today, Kevin Beverly, you know, is in the show. You'll hear us talk a lot about Volta. And our other friend, Kia Eastman, is in the show as well. She does a ladder act and a bungee act.
Bungee rings act was so awesome. We don't really touch on the podcast episode, but it's cool. You know, Cirque always throws out these sweet combo acts. Like they had the trampoline thing we talked about on Ryan Shinji's episode. And Luzia has this cool treadmill act and like Rain. But this show has a super sweet bungee and ring swinging rings combination that I'd never seen before on a stage. And it was
really good.
It was awesome.
Dachi also is in it. And
yep, Diablo hoop diving Dachi. And Devin Henderson's in it as well.
You hear me talk about the show and my opinion about it in our interview with Kevin. But I thought it was so super good. There were some places where I was like, this makes no sense. Or it's like, this doesn't need to be happening. And also, like, the stage is crazy because it raises and it creates this, like, little walkway. But it is only used once in a transition. nothing interesting happens with it. But I found out later that they cut an act that used those ramps. And so I was like, oh, wow.
I think that's common in Cirque du Soleil. Like, there used to be a bunch of acts in Ka, like, way back when, where they built all these cool props and, like, the physical acts and just got cut. Kevin talks about that a little bit.
The whole process of making Volta is actually very interesting to hear, especially after seeing it. One thing we didn't talk about in the interview that I think is important to just mention is that a performer on the show did pass away. Jan Arnaud, who is actually Kevin's partner on the show, he passed away doing the show in Tampa. We don't talk about it, but it was, when we saw it, was
talked about it on the last episode.
Yeah, we did talk about it on the last episode. And when we saw the show, it was their first stop back after that accident happened. So the show is super good. I feel like I know a lot more about the show after listening to our interview with Kevin. Even if you haven't seen the show, it's still super interesting to hear
about. Did you learn it after you listened to the interview or while you were talking to Kevin?
I'm tired. While I was listening to Kevin talk about it, that's how I went about it.
So before we get into today's episode, if you like the show, please find us on Facebook, like us. You can follow us on Instagram. Lindy does some pretty sweet stories.
I do. And whenever we see a show, I try to story it.
Twitter tweet us. If you got questions, topics you want us to talk about, email us at hello@hideawaycircus.
Enjoy our episode with Kevin Beverly.
Kevin, where are you from originally?
I was born in Danbury, Connecticut, which a lot of people don't know about me, but...
Connecticutians over here.
I'm an East Coaster.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it at all because at like 2.5 years old, I moved to the suburbs of Chicago.
Oh, why did your parents move for work?
Or? Work. My dad got a job at Kraft Foods, like manufacturing stuff like that. And I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago.
So your folks aren't circus people?
Not at all.
So how did you discover it?
This whole journey started way back when I was like 5 because my brothers were wrestling. Oh. So I started taking wrestling too just because that's what they were doing. And I hated it. I absolutely fucking hated it. Sorry, can we swear? I don't even know.
We're explicit.
And... the wrestling place, they rented out the gymnastics gym. Yeah. So while I remember running like drills, like running back and forth and having like the worst cramp of my life and not knowing what that was. And I remember the coach being like, it means run harder. And like, I would look over and I would see kids doing flips and doing floor routines. And I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah,
like that's so much better. So I switched to gymnastics. Yeah.
And any sisters or just
two on the baby?
So three boys. Wow.
My oldest brother is very smart, 4.0, and a very good athlete. And then my middle brother is like a best athlete, like really good at football, really good at baseball. And then there was like me. So I did gymnastics for about like 4 years, like competed, but I wasn't very good. And then my best friend at the time, he switched to dance. And so I followed him. Ooh. I was like, I want to do that too.
What kind of dance were you taking?
Started out with... like tap and hip hop and jazz. I was like, not doing ballet.
No ballet.
Yeah, I was like, no. I was like, I want to do cool stuff.
They usually make you do ballet.
Well, yeah. After the first year, they were like, I had a teacher who was like, if you want to be good, you need to do ballet. Like, you have to do ballet. So they kind of pushed me into doing it, and I'm happy I did. Yeah.
Right now,
did you have like friends teasing you in high school or anything, like any overcoming, like people being like, what is Kevin doing? What a weirdo.
It's funny because I always had this fear, this like really hardcore fear that people would find out that I was a dancer and they make fun of me. I thought I was going to get bullied. So only my close friends knew. My dad didn't know. Well, I thought my dad didn't know for a year and I told my mom not to tell him, but I never really got made fun of.
Yeah.
I can't remember like an instance where I was made fun of or anything like that. I think it was just, I was very self-conscious about it.
Why were you so nervous about your dad finding out?
So my dad is like manly man, like sports. He went to work every day, like really early, came home, ate, went to bed. You know, like my dad was business and drinking and sports. And so, I don't know, I just saw how my brothers were and I saw that I was different. And so it made me scared. And I'll never forget my dad. He like for sure he knew. Like my mom was taking me to dance 3 times a week. Like for sure he like figured it out. And he calls me into like our office where we had like our computer with AOL and stuff like that.
Oh my God, AIM.
Right. And he was like, so I got a call today from the dance factory. He's like, do you want to say something? I was like, no. And he's like, why did you hide it from me? Like, he was like, he's like, I'm proud of you no matter what. You like, do what you want.
Where's he from?
Philadelphia.
Although, yeah.
Yeah. So, but he just has this manly mentality that actually he's a very sensitive person, and I didn't know that. I remember the first time he came to my dance competition, he like cried. He was like super, super proud of me. So
you did dance competitively then?
Yeah. And then right from taking ballet, they like put me in the competition team, and I did that for 10 years.
Ballet? What like genre of dance did you?
I mean, mostly competition. We would do like jazz, contemporary, hip hop, tap. Mm-hmm. And then like we'd have like a ballet competitive team. It was, you know, I do everything. I jumped into it like hardcore right from like 10 years old. So.
My God.
And I loved it. I had so much fun doing it.
So when did the transition happen in your brain of being like, all right, maybe being a professional dancer isn't for me, but that circus stuff, that gymnastics is still
interesting. That flips. So even when I was like, I started out as a kid competing and I loved it, and then it kind of started transitioning into, it was like hardcore, 5 days a week. I had no life. My school friends hated me because I could never hang out or have sleepovers, and I just started realizing, I was like, I don't want to do dance as my life. Like I don't want to go to college for dance. Mm-hmm. This is like beginning of high school. I was like, I definitely don't want to go to college for dance. And I just had this feeling that I was like, this is not something I want to pursue, but I didn't know what. And I wasn't stressed about it. I just kind of wasn't thinking about it. And then
NECA must be coming along soon, because I think we met when we were like 16 or 17, right. Well, and you were doing pro track.
So right before that, I went from my public high school to a dance high school in the city of Chicago. Mm. And it was called the Chicago Academy for the Arts.
So you were like really into the dance track.
Yeah, it was like happening.
Wow.
And so I was really happy I went to this school because it was a different feel. It was very artsy. Mm-hmm. And I met like all types of different kind of people. And I realized that dance wasn't something I wanted to do, but this art feel, this like not suburban life was great. Mm. So at that time, I saw Cirque du Soleil on TV. I saw Bravo, I saw Verikai, I saw that Fire Within life.
You saw the life in Fire Within, and it was still appealing to you? Because I saw Fire Within and I was like, oh man, it's so much tougher than.
I saw it and I was like, I want to do that. I was like, well, it was like a Fire Within marathon up until they showed Verikai like on Bravo. So it was like everything to me. I was like, I saw the process.
Yeah. Thank God for Bravo, right? The whole generation.
Honestly, I like tell everyone, I'm like, Bravo like made me a circus artist. Yeah.
So, I love Bravo. I mean, like, Real Housewives. Yeah. Every city.
All of it.
My jam.
So I told my mom I want to take circus classes, and that's when I found the Actors Gymnasium in Chicago.
Oh.
So while I was going to the city, to the Chicago Academy for the Arts doing dance, I would drive on Mondays and Tuesdays so I could go to Evanston after, north of the city, and start taking classes. Mm. And after my first circus class, it was like a general circus class with Sylvia Hernandez, and I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, for sure. I had it like...
You just knew.
Yeah. It was just...
Did you know trapeze at that point?
No, it was kind of general, like two highs, walking on a globe, a little bit of tissue and rope. And I recognized like rope and tissue from Cirque, of course. Right. I was like, this is cool. I like aerials. But it was just exciting. And I felt that in my dance world, I was missing something. Yeah. And I loved this like... I loved me merging my... Well, I just started in circus, but I loved the excitingness that the flipping and everything that I got from gymnastics, and I can merge it with my dance. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. Mm-hmm. That was very exciting for me. So basically, right from after high school, which I finished in the dance department of the Chicago Academy of the Arts, it was like a big no-no if you didn't like go to a conservatory or a dance college after. But I was like, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. So I auditioned for ENC in 2008, and I didn't get in. I went to Toronto and I didn't get in, so I decided to go to I auditioned, sent my like a video to NECA, and I got in.
So was that like early pro track days?
That was the second or third year they've ever done it. So very, very beginning. Yeah.
I was just thinking about auditioning for ENC and not getting in, but then not also feeling deterred that you...
I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
Like the letter came and I was like in my bed and my mom had to wake me up, like get up and go to school. And she's like, oh, the letter came. And she's like waiting for me to open it. And I was like, it. And I was like, I just like give it back to her. I was like, I didn't get in. Aww. And I was I remember like driving to school, like crying. I was super sad just because I thought I had this like vision of my future in my head. And when it's kind of the first time that it's like things don't go your way.
Right.
So it was a really good life lesson because I was like, I still want to do this, but I know I can't get to Montreal, but I know I can try again next year. Mm-hmm. So it was a good lesson for me to think, what can I do? Mm-hmm. So I moved to Vermont and I did a year basically just working my ass off to get ready for the audition, which I'm so happy I did. It was like I was working on the exercises that I knew I would have to do at the Montreal audition, and at the same time meeting new amazing people like Amy Hancock and Elsie and Serenity and Bill and all of them. So it was a great experience.
Yeah. So when you first auditioned for ENC, what did you go in as your discipline?
I auditioned in Cirso and and aerial hoop. Yeah.
Amazing.
It was so bad.
So far away from.
I know, but it's just like, if I would have got in and I was like aerial hoop, like who would I be? Like, it's just so weird how life works, you know? It's crazy. But I'm so glad that I did know trapeze before that, but I made, the only act I ever made was on aerial hoop. And so.
So that's just what you knew.
Yeah. And so I just did that. And then I went to NECA and I met Amy Hancock, and she kind of, we both kind of found dance trapeze at the same time, of her like showing it to me, mm-hmm. and also me like, I want to do that. And
so for somebody who's like 15 or a parent of a kid, when we say dance trapeze, what is the difference between dance trapeze and trapeze in general?
Right. So, how I describe it is static trapeze is like a regular bar with two ropes that are parallel to each other. And that static trapeze, you can swing and you can fly from it and you could do just normal tricks. But if you take those two ropes and you put them together in a triangle, like put them together to one point, you put a swivel on that point, you can make it spin, you can run around with it. If you have a pulley system, you can go up and down. It kind of makes trapeze a little bit more accessible. You could do so much more with it than just...
more dynamic.
Yeah, more dynamic, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's called dance trapeze. There's either single point or dance, but I call it dance just because of Montreal. But it's, I mean, I was a dancer, so it kind of just made sense to me. And
right.
I loved the movement that you could do with the bar and the ropes, and I loved the freedom of it.
But just jumping back for 1 second, was it weird having to go from basically doing no upper body stuff in dance to all of a sudden doing circus, which is like, you know, ripping your hands apart and...
pain.
We work with dancers in various shows, and even though it seems like the skill set overlaps, in fact, I don't think it does that often, particularly if you have a traditional dance background.
Yeah, I think like I was always a strong dancer. I was always the one picked to lift girls. I think from my gymnastics background.
Yeah.
But the strength and the like. How everything was very hard and like in a tough, hard way. It didn't bother me.
Yeah.
I loved
it. Fun.
Yeah. It was like, I love this transition. I loved working out. I loved like seeing me getting bigger. And I was like, wow, this is paying off. Yeah. I love
it. Pecs.
Right.
I think I met Kevin when he was doing pro track and I was just training at NECA. Maybe
like on Saturdays or something.
And I think you're maybe a year older than I am. So maybe like my last year of Smirkus training at NECA and you were training on pro track.
And it was so funny because like the Smirkus kids would come in and they like kind of take over the gym and all the pro track people were like, because the pro, so, like back in my time, they were a little bit older and they'd be like, oh, these fucking
kids.
They start when they were younger and they're so amazing. And I was like, I'm their age.
Right. You go to see a Smirkus show and you're like, wait, you just did that trick and you're just like tiny. Because you look at like the, not amateur scene in New York. What's the better?
The amateur scene in New York? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I would call it.
The amateur scene in New York. And
people have like the training, everyone training in New York.
Right, right. And you know, you're like, oh, that's good. And then you go see Smirkus, you're like, my God.
Yeah. I actually never saw Smirkus until after ENC, but everyone always connects me with Smirkus.
Our generation.
Right.
Yeah.
And like,
for some reason,
I went to
like,
NECA, like Gypsy Snyder from the Seven Fingers. She's always like, you're not from New England? I'm like, not really. No,
just
I'm not,
NECA.
Yeah.
Chicago by way of Danbury.
Exactly.
I got my driver's license in Danbury.
Boom.
Fun fact.
I don't know anything about Danbury. I drive through, I see a sign, I'm like, hey.
Hi, that's where I grew up.
Yeah.
So what was it like, the process of going through ENC? What was your experience like? We've heard versions where it was very challenging for some people emotionally, and others where it was like a fun three-year party where you came out with a girl.
It was both for me. I feel like I'm in the middle. ENC was the best time of my life. It was also the hardest. It was like some of the hardest things I had to deal with. And the training, I've never had that much training. And it was a little bit of like a slap in the face of like, this is work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like if you want to get to that dream, they like this idea of working on stage for the Fingers or for Elwaz or for Cirque or whatever, you have to go through the step because you get to a place like ENC and you see all these amazing people and you're like, oh my God, I'm not that special. You know, like it really, it showed me like, I want to be unique. I want to be amazing, but I also want to be unique. And so.
Do you feel like ENC taught you more than technique, or do you feel like your voice, because I definitely think you have one in your acts, is something that you bring with it and something you've always sort of had?
I don't think ENC gives you that. No. I think that it's an amazing, amazing school, and it's for technique and also for having fun and parties and meeting people and connections. But I think the artistic side of ENC, like I used quotations for artistic because it's such a word that people are like, oh, I have to work on artistic today. I'm like, what does that mean? You know, like I'd say it's lacking a little bit. There's not a lot of acting classes. In second and third year, you work with an artistic counselor, but like once a week. And so it's hard though. You know, some people really enjoy that time with an artistic director and acting, and some people are technicians and they want nothing to do with it. Right. So what does a school do? You know?
Yeah. I always find that I can always be like, that person, I'm like 98% sure went to ENC because their technique is always so good.
You guys would say that like ENC has like a little look to it.
Yeah, totally.
Well, all the schools do.
Everyone says that.
Yeah, but
ENC, it's not just ENC. Like the Australian schools have a look to it.
No, it's true.
Circus school in London has a look to it. If you're doing some of the specific majors,
the French school. Yeah, yeah.
ENC always does the like, I'm gonna look broodingly at my apparatus. And then I'm going to walk over to it.
There's always like the stereotypical thing about like string music. And I go to the final exam, I'm like, oh my God, everyone's using fucking string music. I'm like, kill me now.
It's like also a lot of like drama and like, which is.
And it's so funny because when you're in it, it's like, I need to be an artist.
Right.
Like even me, like I would just get so down on myself and I would have my teacher be like, it's just. All you're doing is performing. Like, it is not a big deal. I'd be like, no, you don't get it. I wanted to be brooding. I wanted to be deep.
But everyone does when they're, like, 22.
I guess when you're training to, like, really express yourself, you know? So people want to go ham with,
But even musical theater,
we have no performance opportunities.
Yeah.
Ever.
Right.
That's, like, another thing that lacks with ENC. But a lot of people shit on that, on ENC for that reason. But I think that we train so much. There's no time. I have no idea when the school could fit it in, you know?
Yeah.
They have like a cabaret in the beginning of the half of the year and then beginning in the cabaret in the second half too. And those are really fun, but it's not enough performance. So
I think that's where the Smirkus kids really do like stand out though. Cause you have so much performance opportunity as a kid. You're doing so many performances. So
And I was a dancer. So I was on stage every month.
You had all the competitions.
Month, you know? Yeah.
Right.
It's like, I loved it.
So you do your graduation piece. What was it like after? Did you get hired? Did you struggle to find work? What was that like?
So everyone's stressed. 30 years, like everyone is, it's just everyone's stressed looking for jobs. And you hear about someone getting a job already when the beginning of third year and you're like jealous and bitter and like, fuck, what do I have to do? You know? And so it's a stressful year, but I was very, like, I had good contacts. Like, I knew the Seven Fingers before I graduated. I thankfully met Julie and Jeff from Midnight Circus before I through email because of Eric Bates. And
it was a Chicago connection.
Right, but I didn't know them before, which is so funny.
Yeah, funny.
It just, like, worked out. So I wouldn't say I was freaking out when I got out of the school, but because I had Seven Fingers reach out to me about Psy, about a replacement on Psy, and I had Midnight Circus that I knew I definitely...
Wait, what show?
It's called Psy. Sorry. Psy is the French way to say Psy.
P-S-Y.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Pussy. Yeah, sorry.
Psy.
Yeah.
It was a show that took place in a mental institution.
It wasn't just like it followed 9 people with a different psychological disease or a disorder, you know? Each person was a caricature of... one specific.
I think I do kind of remember this.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen the trailer.
One of their less successful shows, but it was my first. I did right after school. I did Midnight, which was awesome. It was like I got introduced to the Chicago circus scene that I had never known. I met the best people in the world, and then I went right away from that. I went to Montreal and I started a little like a quick month creation for Psy for Psy. And. So I was very lucky to kind of just go into jobs.
Mm-hmm. Your first discipline is dance trapeze and then second is hoop.
Is hoop diving.
Hoop diving.
Yeah. I minored in hoop diving because I started rooming with the San Francisco kids, with Jordan Dawson and Devin Henderson and all these people. And I was like, that looks dope. Because I had a little bit of my acrobatic ability from gymnastics, but then I got even better at ENC. I pushed that. And I love that... hoop diving was like stylized and it was acrobatics, but very specific. And like, mm-hmm. it's not just willy nilly doing whatever you want. You'd like have to do the right technique. I like that. I like that discipline.
Mm. I like hoop diving.
Yeah. Super fun. So yeah, now I'm only doing hoop diving. So.
I know.
I know.
What did you do in C?
It was actually a static trapeze act. Oh. I was like, really like, can we make it into a dance trapeze act just because I finished school? And that's what you do is you try to like get your act. You want to do your act. But it was already a French guy who graduated from ENC like 5 years prior, named Guillaume Bion, and he did a stag trapeze act. Mm-hmm. So I just adopted that. Mm-hmm. It was awesome though. I loved it. So on top of acrobatics, tons of acting, lots of dancing. But mm-hmm. yeah.
How did Queen of the Night happen? And maybe you can explain a little bit about what that show is, because it's a pretty weird combination of things.
Yeah, that was awesome. So after PC, I had a little bit of time off. And Shayna, I was the first person Shayna talked to about this project, which is super exciting. I love this story. She like called me to go like have a coffee with her, and she was telling me about this show, this like, it's immersive. And I was like, what is immersive? What does that mean? She's like, well, have you heard of Sleep No More? And I was like, kind of. And she said that they were going to do, Seven Fingers was going to collaborate with a bunch of people from New York to create a immersive dinner theater where the audience would walk in and you would walk around the space and then eventually sit down, see a show, which would be the circus show, and have dinner. And she was telling me about this huge project. And I was like, yeah, I'm definitely. And she's
and
like,
New York.
Yeah. And she was like, I'm thinking of you just because like you could do a lot and it would be fun. Like the acting and the playing around. I think you would like that. And I was like, absolutely. So I don't really remember the transition from there to there, but we started creation with just the circus people in Montreal, and Shayna created the show basically. And we didn't know, we like really didn't know anything about the actors or the dancers or like the one-on-ones. It was it was very broad for us. We were just like, let's just see how this goes. So we did 2 months of creation. We made a circus show, and then we brought that circus show to New York where we met the rest of the cast, and that's where everything changed. It was like, that's when we met.
It seems like such the wrong way to go about creating that show.
It was like crazy. I'm happy that we had that time because I think if we would have been everyone together, the show would have gone in so many directions. Because what happened is when we got to New York, there became the main director, there became the 2 choreographers. Shayna was the circus director, the food director. I mean, it was literally
was
too
like
many
the
cooks
main
in the kitchen.
Director?
Christine Jones.
Oh, Christine Jones, yeah. Right? Who also did the set?
This project happened at the same time Roja Balai was happening, which suffered from literally all of the exact same problems. That
right.
Like a choreographer and director and assistant director and a food and beverage manager and like too many cooks in the kitchen making the thing.
It's so true. So once we got to New York, we kind of meshed with the dancers and the actors, and we started learning about these one-on-ones. And that's when we started like really diving into immersive acting and like what that's like and working with Randy Weiner and like all these things.
It's actually pronounced Weiner.
Weiner, is it?
Yeah. He was on our podcast as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, Randy, like, how do I pronounce your name? I want to say Weiner because it feels like a more politically correct way of saying
it's Weiner.
He's like, no, it's Weiner.
Oh, it's Weiner.
It is Weiner.
Oh, man. Well.
And he's like, but people say Weiner, but it is actually Weiner. And I was like, okay, so now I'm going to say with gusto, Randy Weiner.
There's this article in the New York Post a couple months ago talking about how in Sleep No More, all the performers get groped because of the immersive nature of the show and sort of like a Me Too aspect. Did that ever happen to you where like performers were like, audience were really crossing the line in these immersive
audience
moments with you?
I would say yes, things like this definitely did happen, although I was a 24-year-old dude, and it was very fun.
Right.
I never felt that the line was crossed, but I remember people, some castmates saying that things would get a little weird and they would talk about it. There was also times when the audience members said the same thing, because mm-hmm. our show is very touchy, and mm-hmm. It was very tactile and all about eye contact and touching, but we would never cross that line. We were always told to never cross that line and make sure the people were always comfortable. But when you have a scene like there's an orgy scene in the Chinese pole act where we would, you know, we would test the lines, which was very fun for us. And yeah.
What was the bathtub?
The
room?
Bathtub. Because we were lucky enough that
you showed us all of the rooms.
Yes.
I have a story about the show that we saw that you were in.
You guys are at my table.
Yeah, we're at your table. I'll tell it right now and then we'll talk about the bathtub.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically that was like my first show like immerse a show like that with Josh, and I was like so in love with him, and he did. He was like, no, he was like not having it.
You weren't together yet.
No, yeah, I was remember. Like so in love still. With him. Yes, and I was like, I had just flown back from Florida because it was his birthday, and I was like, I just want to. I'll be with him for his birthday, and I was, and then we were seeing the show. And you asked us at the table, was it, you go, is anyone in love at this table? And in my head, I was like, this is going to be the moment that Josh is like, yes. And he goes, no. And I was like, oh. And then you go, how do you know each other? And he goes, and I go, where, I was about to say, we're friends. He goes, we are colleagues.
We're coworkers.
Coworkers. And I was like, oh,
I remember
God.
That.
It was like the worst moment of my, I was like, not only does he not love me, he thinks we're coworkers.
You're like friend zone.
Yeah, friend zone to the max. And we were sitting like with a couple that had been together for like 20 years. And she's like,
we like shifted it.
Oh my God. And I was like, whoever this kid is, because I had just met you, I was like, he asked the worst question. But yeah. And then you were like, showed us around afterwards. So I want to hear about the bathtub.
Because right.
The lady next to me got pulled for the bathtub.
Okay, yeah.
And I was pissed.
It's the wax bathroom. And in the beginning of the show, you can actually walk through it. Mm. It gets a little trafficy there because there was no space. But basically, there's the bathtub scene, which is like one of the best, but it's during the hoop diving act. So,
you would have missed that.
And they take one woman, and they usually try to take like a motherly, a little bit older woman. And basically, they bring them in. It's one woman. It's one actress and one and the audience member. And they give her the choice, would you like to take a milk bath? And they like hold very, you know, politically correct. They hold up, you know, a towel. She gets naked. She goes into a milk bath. And then another girl, I think, comes in. And they sing to her, and they and it's like a really, really beautiful moment. And I think the actress they talk about love and they talk about motherhood and all these things. And I've heard so many good things about this one. Like,
so
it was one of the
best
ones.
So no wonder why I didn't
ones.
Get picked. Yeah. older woman.
But there's also other things, like the main character, who's my best friend, Valerie Benoit. She, in the beginning of the show, she's in the bathtub for the first 30 minutes. And she asks men to come in and shave her legs.
Oh, wow.
And as she shaves her legs, she was like, tell me about first time you lost your virginity, you know, like all these. Personal Queen of the Night matches. Was awesome. It was yeah. just it was amazing.
I mean, we saw Randy there actually that night. I think it was a preview.
Okay, yeah.
And he was like, what did you think? And I was like, who's this person asking this question? And I was like, oh, the creator of the show. But it was the room was, once you got downstairs, because the entrance, I thought it was just not done. And once you got downstairs, I was like, wow, this is like the most insane design of a space I've ever seen. It's so cool. The bathrooms were so insane. Mm-hmm. They had like these hands as doorknobs and
best.
Like LSD, like wallpaper. I mean, it was just so
cool.
But there was so much happening.
Yeah.
There was so much happening. Like, I couldn't focus on anything. It was like, the food is all choreographed. Like, all
and I'm
of
sure
the
we, like,
you
got
guys.
You very drunk. Like, everyone leaves that show
well,
wasted.
After you asked if we weren't in love, I was like, ugh.
Man. Hilarious.
But yeah, I mean, it was a really...
I'm glad you guys had fun.
And Dachi was in that show, too.
Yeah.
Hope Diving.
And
wait,
Diablo.
Did you do the Chinese pole thing at the beginning?
At the beginning.
There was like the thing that
no,
we had
that's
to...
the serial couple did that.
Yeah, a little duo. Yeah.
Right, I was like, did you also? Can you also do that?
I mean, I was his backup, so I did do that, but not as good.
So, jumping quite a bit in time, last week, 2 weeks ago, we saw you in Cirque du Soleil's most recent touring creation, Volta.
Yes.
And you were on that since the creation, right?
Yep, very beginning.
So, how does it compare to Fire Within? Was it just like the documentary?
Oh my goodness. This is where I have to like... choose my words. the creation process with Cirque du Soleil is very difficult.
How long does it take?
7 months.
Dang.
A 6-7 month creation. Like, some people, I think, in the circus world, they're like, that sounds amazing. You have all this time. But it not only is it too much time, but you kind of lose faith a little bit.
Right.
In, like, what you're doing.
Like,
not in, not in like, the general sense of circus, but
your
in...
Your windows open.
Sorry. You know, I like, not in the general sense of circus, but more so in this show, like, where is this show going? What are we doing? That being said, I'm so happy and thankful that I got a chance to do a Cirque du Soleil creation, because a lot of people jump into Cirque and join a show that's already been up, or they never get to experience that. So, but, it was challenging, and we worked on our hoop diving act for 4 months, and then we did our first Lion's Den in front of all the big wigs. And then we changed the act completely.
There's Could you explain what that term lion's den means?
So lion's den, in my mind, is when it's when the bigwigs, when Guy La Liberté comes, when all the head honchos of Cirque, they come and they watch the first presentation of your show. I'm pretty sure it's called lion's den because it's like you're walking into a lion's den. And it's very common in a Cirque process that acts get cut and people get fired in the creation process, okay? Mm. So we were all nervous. But we all had high hopes for Volta because we thought that it was on the right track of something that was going to be amazing and new. And then we kind of slowly realized that it wasn't what we thought it was going to be exactly. After that first Lion's Den, three people got fired. Our act was like on the brink of getting cut.
The hoop diving. Oh my God, it was like my favorite act in the show.
Well, our stage manager, she calls the act the little act that could, because they didn't get it. They did not understand what hoop diving was. They were like, you can't hit. And we're like, no, we have to hit. You know, like it's one, we're not hitting on purpose. It's just like happening. We need more training.
Oh, like you can't, when you say you can't
hit the hoop, sorry. Right. When I say you can't hit, I mean.
So hoop diving, I think everyone who's listening probably knows, but just in case people don't know.
Yeah.
We've talked about hoop diving a lot, but maybe explain what hoop diving is.
Hoop diving is, it's called Chinese hoop diving. And it's basically you're doing acrobatics through these hoops. That
like hula hoops.
Yeah, or like a little smaller. Bit thicker. Yeah, a little bit thicker. Right. So that the audience can see you're actually going through something.
Oh, that's now, true. They are thicker.
These hoops are usually on magnets so that if they fall, you're not dying. They just fall over. And what I love about this act so much and why I've fallen so much in love with hoop diving is it's really, I call it the hoop diving formula. It's like the audience gets invested in you. They see you doing this act, and it's almost like a sporting event. Mm-hmm. They see you fail because often in hoop diving, even if it's a small trick, you tap it. It's like hard. It's very specific acrobatic movements. So it's common you hit the hoop, they fall, and they realize that these hoops aren't taped on. Mm-hmm. They're not like, it's not fake. This is real, and these are humans. And you know, when you hit a trick, you can see the audience clapping louder and yelling louder, mm-hmm. wanting you to do better. And if you hit again, I mean, they go crazy. You know, they're like, you can see them like sweating, yeah. And they want the best for you. Yeah. And I think that's beautiful because there's not a lot of apparatuses that are like that, you know? So, yeah.
So one of the things I know we're going to talk about in the pre-show to your interview is how much I liked the M83 music
right.
in Volta. Yeah. What was that like hearing it for the first time? I remember you tweeting about it or Facebooking. Yeah. Like, I can't wait for you guys to hear this
man.
Music.
Yeah, so Anthony Gonzalez, he's the main guy from M83. He created our music. And,
so good.
Oh my gosh. And I did not know this joining the project, I think. I think that right when I started, we found out during the beginning of the creation who he was. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a new direction for Cirque, you know?
Yeah.
Like, obviously Cirque is...
Right?
They've tried, like, different things with the music, but...
Different things. It all sounds the same. This was the first one I was like, oh my God, I can jam to this. Like, it's so good.
Okay, that's really good to hear. Yeah, I was ecstatic because I fell in love with the music right away. And I told you backstage, I right away fell in love with the music, with the costumes and the style of Volta. Mm-hmm. I was like, all these things are on point. Let's see if we can get the show across.
I love, so in Volta, there's like half of the time you see people in these like kind of like muted gray tones
yeah.
and tans. And then the other half is like more tribally prints with like vibrant colors. And
right.
I loved the juxtaposition between like the like military-esque uniform
yeah.
versus like this like free kind of, and what I noticed all this, but like, I don't know if I'm normal audience, but I noticed how like almost all the acts happen in the like the tribal print costumes.
And the free spirit.
Yeah. And like all the like military moments like interspersed between all the acts are like the muted colors and like everyone comes alive almost
exactly.
like during their acts.
Yeah.
Which I loved. But also going back to what you said about hoop diving, when we saw it, the dude who does like the one that's like, was it Dachi? I don't know, like the hard, like a really hard trick.
Dachi
where you're
Baller.
Like, oh my God. And he hit. And then the audience is like, come on, you can do it. And I'm always like, yeah. Like, and then he gets in. Everyone is just like so happy.
But it's like, it's a testament. Like you
yeah.
felt it.
Yeah.
I think it's super special, you know?
It's like with flying trapeze too.
Yeah, everyone's same
like,
thing.
Get it.
That's a good example. Yeah. And on the other hand, being on stage and being like, oh my God, I need to make this trick
right.
really bad. It's like, oh.
I always am like, oh, okay, that actually is a good question because I always have it. So when you hit and then the audience is like, come on, you can do it. Are you like,
oh shit,
shitting your pants?
Oh, I mean, if it's a, it depends on how the act is going. If the act has been perfect and you get to those hard tricks, you hit, I'm like, this is what we needed. For the act, this is what
yeah.
we needed to get this audience invested. But if we've hit dumb tricks in the beginning three times, then during our three hoop section, when it's not so hard, someone else hits, and you can start feeling that the audience is feeling bad for you. It's like, now, then you're like, I need to make this.
Yeah.
And we've been in situations before on stage where you're like, get me off stage, because we've hit too much, and by the end, the audience is just like, okay, we get it.
Yeah,
go next act, please.
Good job.
So
yeah. Cirque du Soleil shows tend to change over, like, the first year or so, right? Like, from when it premieres to when it, like, not like Broadway. In Broadway, you got, like, 3 or 4 months to change a show, 3 or 4 weeks
You have, like, a month of previews, and then you're locked in.
And then it's fixed, which is not the case for Sir.
Yeah.
So, what is it, you know, how did the show change, and, like, what kinds of things were discovered along that process?
Yeah, that's a very, very big question for Volta, because Volta is kind of famous for the amount of changes that we've had in the first year. Like I said, in creation, it's normal for changes and people to get cut and acts to get cut. It's not so normal for a whole act, for a whole show to be revamped. And that's what's happened with Volta. We've had to basically, when they open a show, they have these like audience surveys that I think you get them in emails sometimes that people, they write down what they think. And what Cirque was getting from the audience surveys is that it was two things. The story wasn't clear enough and the acts weren't high enough. They weren't high enough caliber technique wise. So, and personally, I agree with both those things. So they went on a mission of like literally a mission to address those two things, which is kind of awesome, actually, if you think about it. Like, the company cares. They don't just want to put out a show that works, kind of. They want to do their best. And so we had to change a bunch of things. We've had very, very many people fired, unfortunately. We've had lots of act changes. Fortunately for Hoop Diving, we haven't changed at all.
Was hair hanging in the beginning?
Hair hanging was... She got added a week before premiere.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I really don't like hair hanging. But man, that act.
She's special.
She is like, it is. She's just so beautiful to watch air, too. Like, her whole, her movement quality.
It's, I mean, it makes hair hanging very fun and interesting and beautiful to watch. She's amazing. Her name is Daniela. She's
not
Brazilian.
It's not just like the, I would say they call it the gross factor
it's
a little
bit.
It's
the shock factor.
Yeah, the shock factor. It's not that. It's like really, I was like, wow. That was amazing.
The audience love her. Yeah.
So what was like the, what are the acts that are no longer in the show?
Oh man. We had a basketball juggler at some point. I did a duo rope act that was like pendulum that was cut way in the beginning. I'm drawing a blank here, but we have a baton girl who originally, so she came in the beginning she was the backup for the hair hanger because there was some visa issues. In the end, the directors fell in love with her and they wanted to keep her.
Yeah.
So her act has been shifted all over the place throughout the show. We got Phil Béranger and Marie-Lee Guibert, who do a unicycle.
Mm-hmm.
They joined the show
a month
into the show. That used to be in a different part of the, that act used to be in a different part of the show. We moved it to the beginning. Hoop diving used to be in the first half. Trial biker. We had three different BMXX. A trial biker we have these big lifts in the show, and he would jump from one lift to the other.
Oh yeah, I thought I saw like photos of that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I didn't see that in the
that
show.
That got cut in Toronto. We lost a ballerina. We got a new ballerina. Lots of things to try to put this show on the right track, and it's been hard, you know, to lose a lot of friends, and you get a little bit afraid of your own job too.
Right.
You're like, well, I guess I can get fired at any point, but this is the entertainment business and we all understand this, but it was a lot.
I would say, so my like critique of the show, which no one cares about, but we can talk about it. I like, this is by far my favorite Cirque show I've ever seen. Like,
really?
For sure. I loved
it
so much. I think it's the music, the costumes, like it felt more like, in a way, relatable than most other Cirque shows, where it's like so weird and the music is so like strange that, and like the people look like bugs or birds or
it's never like touched you.
Yeah. And so this one, I was like, I really like it. The thing that felt like out of place was, and I think I said this to you afterwards when you like explained to me that it's new, was the whole storyline of the son and the mom. And like, I got that his hair was making him feel uncomfortable and weird because the main character's hair is like blue feathers.
Right.
And it's very clear that that's what makes him feel bad. I didn't need all the backstory of his mom and him. And also it was like, I didn't get why he was thinking about it. Because he's like, he clearly feels like he's not fitting in. And over the course of the show, he's like finding his way with all these people.
Right.
And I got that all. I didn't need the videos.
Yeah.
And the weird, like, I'm looking at a tricycle and now I see a bike act. You know, like, that was the...
It was a little bit too much for
you. Yeah.
Yeah, that... Our show story has taken, I mean, like in any show, our, I think originally, to be completely honest, the they call that flatland biking, which is a guy on a bike and he spins and he does like flatland, you know, no ramps. And the ballerina, the pas de deux, originally that was supposed to be the mom and the dad. But then our little Japanese man flatland biker doesn't look like a dad.
No.
So they made it into a young was. It was him when he was a kid.
Right.
And so he's looking at that act's called daydreaming. So he's like looking at memories and he's remembering his past with his mom.
No, I totally got that.
I think that the reasons why we have that is to have an act, to show a transition. And also I think they wanted to show a time where he was comfortable with himself and he was a kid. He didn't care about this weird
hair
that he has. He didn't care what people thought of him. And, you know, so I think that was the main points. But yeah, I mean, I would have to agree with you. There's lots of things in the show where you're like, okay, really?
Yeah.
So you've been on original Seven Fingers creations, original Cirque creations, which I think for a lot of people are like the bucket lists of what do I want to accomplish, you know, when I'm a circus artist. What's on like your list of like, all right, I'll do surf for a couple of years and then I have to make sure I
get this on.
How old are you? I'm 28.
Fit it all in.
I'm getting under there. 30. I'm getting old. Like my body hurts. That's a super good question, man. And I need to think a lot about that. I know that I wasn't going to resign, but I think I'm going to now.
How long are the
tour route coming up?
Yeah. Well, that has something to do with it. And I just, our cast has like recently got very close together. And so it was, I feel like I didn't want to leave yet. I wasn't ready yet. And not to mention working with Cirque du Soleil is very awesome and great pay, great living situation. You know, it's, I kind of love that. It makes it hard to leave, but there are, I want to go back to Seven Fingers as soon as possible. I love working with them. I love doing creations with them. I think they bring out their artists very well. You know, they look for what you do and they do what they do best and they make a show with it, which is, I think, so amazing. And, you know, a huge company like Cirque, they don't have time for that. It's
you got to fit more.
Exactly. Yeah. And as an artist, that's kind of your job to like, how can I make myself shine in a show like Cirque du Soleil, which I try to do every day. You know, like I'm one of 45 people, but I want to be like that guy, you know? That ginger jumped through hoops.
What? Okay, so at the end of every time you like jumped through hoop, you're like boop, 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 with your hands, or like you did like a snake thing.
Oh, did you see me do that?
Yeah, what was that? Yeah.
There's our BMX guy the night before you got here. He saw the show. He hurt himself.
Oh.
And so he sprained his ankle.
Oh, I think he was sitting behind us because he was kid.
He was. Whatever. Yes. Yeah. His name's Jeff. He has like blonde
whoever
hair.
Whoever is behind us clearly knows this cast. Yes.
Yeah. So in BMX, like right when they started in creation, they had this like stupid handshake, which is like etched from dodgeball. It's like, and so, he was like, it's kind of tough. Boom, 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 boom. Nope, that's not
it.
You'll
what
get
is
it one day. He could slap.
Oh.
Yeah. There we go. Now you're a BMX person.
Now I can do the BMX.
So that was just a little shout out to him. And it's so funny because I didn't realize you guys were there until after my act. I thought you were there.
We moved. Wrong seats. We upgraded.
Oh.
That's a fun feature, sir.
Concierge. It's
upgrade,
a new thing.
Upgrade your
seats.
Yeah,
they're like, you
$20?
Can upgrade for
$20. The price for the seat we had was $200 and we paid like $75, I think.
See, that's dope. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I know. We moved and then I was like, what is this little sneaky thing?
I did it twice because the first time he wasn't looking. I did it again. Sorry. That's
is that part of the choreo?
Listen, guys, doing 10 shows a week, you got to make your life interesting.
Yeah,
so
you do.
I found it.
It's 10 show week. So what days do you have the mat?
Yeah,
days?
Bro. We're not always 10 show. I always describe 10 show weeks, but it's 8, 9, or 10.
Mm.
So when we do a 10 show, it's Tuesday, 8 p.m., Wednesday, 8 p.m., and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, two shows. Yeah. It's
hey, this is not Big Apple. They're doing three show days.
Oh my goodness, man. I can't even imagine.
They're like, gotta get those tickets sold.
Oh my gosh.
So what's your read on like circus in America generally like the past like year or two? You feel like more things are happening, less things are happening, no difference?
It's a tough question. I feel, to be completely honest, I feel a little bit out of the loop in the American circus world. And I kind of always did that a little bit purposely. I find sometimes, okay, well, I'll answer your question first. I think it's stagnating or less is happening, in my opinion. And that's sad, you know, it's sad to see Ringling go, and it's sad to see these American, you know, landmark companies go by the wayside. But yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on in America with circus.
I
found, and this is just my opinion, I found that like this circus world in America, as far as training goes and schools go, I've always found it like weird. And I guess the word I always think of when I think of like American schools are petty. And there's like, I feel there's very, lots of weird things going on in each school that I go to that I never actually experienced in Montreal, which everyone loves to talk shit about ENC. And they love to, they love to talk about like the bourgeoisie and the French Canadian bullshit. But like, I always felt welcome to do whatever I wanted to do in ENC. There's drama with, we're like kids, you know, learning, so we're old, like young
adults.
And
you're like attractive kids too, because you're all ripped.
Right.
So you're like...
So lots of bad things happen in that way. But like, I just get the feeling that the American circus drama in schools is a bit too much for me. And I never enjoyed that.
Mm.
And like... I don't know why that is. I think maybe money has to do with it, and that when you have a circus school in America, it's a business, and that things need to happen in a business to make things work.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never, and maybe because since ENC is so successful, I never felt like that weird administrative drama. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's the school landscape in America is very interesting, and we talk about a good amount, I guess, because we have some of the school founders on.
Okay.
And it is like,
yeah, I would love to know kind of their point of view, you know.
We can listen to the podcast. Well,
one of the things I think about schools on your point is that in order to get like funding, they need to say that they're going to be the best, biggest, brightest American school.
Okay.
Prior to them necessarily being the best, biggest, brightest school. And I think, you know, in my opinion, NECA is the one that is currently the most money where their mouth is as far as, like, time and existence.
I definitely agree with
staff
that.
And the building. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think it is a business. I think they have to say, like, okay, to operate, we're going to raise X tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And, you know, that becomes the people who's running its focus more than, you know, picking coaching staff or picking, you know, specific things.
And I've also found, like... Because most cities have a couple schools in it, and I found like they hate each other, or not hate each other, but
like
there's drama.
Yeah,
even in New York, the schools are
everywhere, every
there's
city,
two.
And it's so weird to me. It's like, I mean, I get it; it's businesses. This is business, but like, I don't want to be a part of that.
No.
I don't, and I'm not a good businessman, so that's not good. But like,
what happens is like people are like, oh well, we need to have a school component, so then that will pay for whatever else, you know, like we need to have classes that people can take. But then, especially in New York, then you have a lot of like silks classes, and then people are like, I can do silks.
It becomes a fitness thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a very interesting thing. But also, circus is, I think, thought about in America as like a populist thing that everyone can do in a way. It was like, and like in Europe and in especially in Montreal, it's like, oh, like, I can take circus classes, but there are circus performers.
Right.
Or circus artists.
That's a very good point. I just mentioned the fitness thing. I feel like circus is a little bit going in the direction of, like, I don't know, Soul Cycle. Or, like, oh, I'm going to do acro yoga, but actually it's, like, a tissue class, and so now I'm a circus artist. But you're right. And, well, I think one issue is that my viewpoint in American circus is that circus isn't an art form here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just because of our circus history here. And that's okay, because I do appreciate traditional circus. I'm not one to be like,
no, I think you have to appreciate
it. Of course, yeah. And I love, you know, there's things I love about it. There's things that I don't like about it. But I think because of that traditional circus American history past, circus is not viewed as an art form here. Mm-hmm. It's not a... You're not a theater major. You're not a dance major. You're like, oh, you're a little bit of a carnival person.
Yeah, and to your point, though, about that, I think is an interesting problem with America is there are a lot of people who are very hung up on circus isn't treated as an art form in America. And the thing is that it's not like the government or anybody really give much of a shit about the arts in America.
Right.
So they fight for being, but all this energy fighting to be recognized as art. Where ultimately, great, you get recognized as an art, but it's not like there's tons of funding for that in the first place.
Even if you like, yeah, it's like even if you got that title next, you know, like theater, dance, circus.
Yeah.
What's gonna happen? Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I go to France. When I go to you guys, do you have any idea how many circus schools are in France? It's crazy. I don't know the number. It's like hundreds and hundreds of hundreds in that little country, and like it's recognized, and so much money is thrown into it. Like, for instance, you guys definitely have to get Back Pocket on here. My buddies, Devin Henderson and Maya Kesselman and Dominic Cruz,
they need to
get in on this, because they went to ENC. Well, Dom and Dev and a bunch of them, half of them went to ENC, half of them went to Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to make their own company, and they went to Belgium because a theater in Belgium called Les Halles are giving them, they're basically promoting a tour. They're like, you guys make the show, we'll give you a tour.
Wow.
And where would that happen here?
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's, and so these Americans, they, I think maybe in their hearts, they would maybe rather stay in the Montreal and the home. They love San Francisco area, but they know that in Belgium, you know, so they are in the middle of creating the show right now in France and in Belgium. And then they start a tour.
Wow.
So, it's just, there's so many opportunities for that kind of art form in Europe that it's not available here yet. And no. I really don't know the answer.
Yeah. Circus in America is an ongoing question.
We'll see where it goes.
Yes.
So, Kevin, we usually end the podcast with the same three questions for each of our guests. The first one being, has there been a piece of advice, either really good or really bad, somebody has given you that has stuck with you?
I can't think of something right now.
Is there a piece of advice you would give somebody who's listening and being an aspiring circus artist?
I would say advice that I would give to someone is say yes to everything and really like try to be as much as you can a yes person in the way of like meeting people and going out and meeting people and also in performing. You know, it's, you'll be asked to do a lot of things and you want to keep all those open and keep those connections. I've a lot of my jobs that I've gotten is just because I've been a fun person, is a stupid way to put it, but like a positive person. And if you're negative and hard to work with, no one wants to work with you. Like, honestly, sometimes it's hard to realize, but it's like if you're just positive and easygoing, it's much, much better for you in the long run.
Right. Know? Well, it's like those people that have their specific deck that they do and they're like, this is what I do and I'm not going to do anything else.
Be adaptable is another thing I would say. Yeah. Positive, adaptable, and like say yes, you know?
So the second question is there a book, a movie, a TV show like Fire Within, a live show that people got to see that you recommend?
Has to do with circus.
Could you do it anything? Like, but if it's got a circus like tent, even better.
Yeah.
This is such a bad answer. The show that changed my life was Traces.
Yeah.
You know, that was like, it was...
It's like everyone's show.
I know, my brother drove me for 4 hours to go in Ann Arbor, Michigan to watch the show. And I saw all the original cast. I saw Raph Cruz up there and I saw everybody. And it blew my mind. It was like, this is exactly the kind of circus that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I would say something nowadays, James Tirier, I would say like...
Do you have a favorite James Tirier show?
I saw Raoul. Raoul's the only...
It's my favorite one.
Yeah. And did you see it at BAM?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it in Montreal right before. I was bawling my eyes out after that show.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like that... it's so amazing and so inventive and so beautiful. And you asked me prior, like, where would I maybe want to go with my life? I do want to get into different forms of performing. You know, I don't want to, obviously I'm getting a little older. So like, I do want to get, I've thought a lot about a one man show. I've thought a lot about more acting and going in these different realms. And he is like the perfect example for that.
He's incredible.
Yeah, but you got it. The dance background is key to what makes James Tyrie's stuff work.
You're right.
Without the dance background,
his movement quality is amazing. Although we just saw, what was the most recent one? The Toad?
The Toad New.
The Toad
New. Oh, yeah. It was I?
Yeah.
It was Val?
No, Val wasn't in it.
Val's out of it
but
now.
Okay, got it.
She was in the creation and then did it for, I think, only a few months.
Okay.
We saw the one previously that she was also in. I mean, she...
Yes,
yeah, Tom Cruise.
Awesome.
Yeah, but you could see the girl who like replaced Val, and you know she didn't have the contortion like skills. Handstand skills.
Yeah,
she's a great dancer.
Yeah,
got it.
So, but like I think for anyone who didn't know Val, they'd be like, "Wow, this girl's amazing." But knowing Val and her ability, you're like, "Ugh."
Exactly.
Yeah, so maybe that's also why I didn't like love it as much. But yeah, James Tyrie.
Yeah.
If you want to see Raoul and you live in New York, you can go to the New York Film on Tape. I think it was called Library at Lincoln Center, and watch it for free so long as you have a New York library card.
Oh, that's amazing. I did not know that. Good job.
You can go see like any Broadway show. They tape every single thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We watched, what did we watch when we were in?
It's all free too. You just got to book in advance.
Funny story. After I saw it in Montreal, I bought my brother and his wife a wedding gift to go see Raoul. And my brother was like, that was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, I will never suggest a show to you ever again because you know nothing. I was
it's all about taste.
I was like, that was an hour and a half of genius, and you just shat on it. And like,
yeah, that's why audiences in New York love it.
I will never forget the effect.
So high. It's high. That's, I mean, James Tyrie is high concept art.
It's definitely hard.
But also, that show was so clever because it was billed as a one man show, but there were actually a few people working on it. So
helping.
There's this amazing effect where you see who you think is James Tyrie banging on the door of his house, and then the house falls apart onto the dude who's banging on it, and James Tyrie is sitting then in the center of the house. So there's a bunch of really just amazing magic also tied into the whole thing.
So good.
So, final question.
You kind of said this, but who do you think we should have on the podcast?
Oh, amazing. You should have the Back Pocket crew.
Yes.
Yeah, you should give Devin Henderson and Dominic Cruz and Maya Kesselman, those three, a call, and they would love to do it. They're kind of doing their own, they're kind of blazing their own trail right now, which I find super inspiring and something that I've had trouble doing my whole, kind of like the past 4 years of my career. I've always wanted to be comfortable in a company situation or know what I was getting myself into. And these guys they're making their own show right now.
Yeah. That is definitely like the pro and con of like being in a big show company that like exists and you know exactly what you're doing. You're going to get paid.
Yeah.
You know exactly the tour out versus either doing your own show, producing your own show or working with someone. Cause it's like the uncertainty of everything is exciting and also terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, some people Jordan Dawson, he like lives off that, and that's it's super inspiring to me. That's something that I have a lot of trouble doing, and it's like amazing that a lot of people just go for it.
It also works because his wife Joshua, who's also amazing, is the exact same way, so they feed one another.
Yeah, they do, and they have a van.
Right,
Vanessa. Hashtag van life. I was like, everyone is getting these fucking vans.
Two people in Volta got vans.
Really? Oh my god! And then do you know Rihanna? She's they got a van. I was like, okay,
everybody.
Yeah. Josh was like, we should get a van. I was like, no.
We have a house.
I was like, we got
a dog and a cat.
Yeah.
Way better than a van. Kevin, thank you so much for coming.
No problem, guys.
Thank you.
Fun chatting with you.
Thanks for letting me do it, guys.
And that was our interview with Kevin Beverly.
If you like our podcast, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, Twitter, tweet us, email us at hello@hadawaycircus.com. Or is there anything else I missed?
Nope, that's it, I think.
That's a lot of things I'm asking you to do, but do one.
Have a great week.
Have a good week, everyone.